So I'm not going to, I don't have anything to load, but I'm not going to reiterate that. What I will tell you is this, is that I'm assuming most of you people, not all of you, but most of you, I assume you're fairly early in your careers and maybe coming out of a dissertation or a thesis and looking for publication. So I'll tell you a little bit about the problems that I have seen with those. One of them is that papers that come straight out of a dissertation or a thesis tend to be a little too long because you have more flexibility in writing. Usually you can tell that because the introductions are very, very long, and they are literally copying that first chapter straight into it. So you need to pay attention to that. The point of looking at the style manual and looking at the instructions to the authors is critical. You want to look through that and be very careful. I can tell you, in the Agronomy Journal, we get a lot of papers. We get about 430 to 50 a year, something like that. We are publishing right now about 40% of the papers that come in. Many of the papers that do not get published or will get released on their first introduction are for various reasons. Sometimes a paper that is released the first time, in fact, will eventually get published. But the first time it comes through, it will be in such a shape, and I don't want to say poor shape, but in such a shape that it is very difficult to review. It will, for example, if you're a non-native English speaker, sometimes it's very hard for us to read them. So if you are doing that, if you have somebody who can help you edit in English, that's good. If not, you can hire professional editorial services for a relatively modest amount that will get it to the point where it can be reviewed. Over 50% of our papers are international. So we have a large number of international papers, and we have a large number of international members on our editorial board. But having said that, the English does have to be pretty high. In fact, I've got a form letter which I edit on each one, but it's called my poor English letter that I send back. But the papers come in, I read them. I do a lot of paper reading. And if it's not reasonable shape, I just simply send it back. Okay? So work on that. The other things that I will tell you that papers can end up getting released for is, one, that the analysis was done incorrectly to the point that it can't be reviewed yet. Okay? So when you're working on your paper, make sure that it's clear in your material and methods how you did your analysis, the statistical analysis, and also any wet laboratory stuff you did. Okay? So that people can understand how you did it. The second one would be was to make sure you have a contribution in your paper. You point out very, very early in your introduction, this is why I'm doing the paper. Right? I mean, this is where the literature lacks sufficient detail. Okay? And then you explain what you did in your paper, and at the end you remind everybody why you did this paper. Lack of contribution is a justifiable reason to release a paper, and it is done frequently. Okay? So do that. Make it clear to everyone. There should be no guess on why you're publishing the paper. And if you do that, I think you'll have a good chance. You'll have a good luck. We, as a comment, and I will reiterate, we're always looking for good reviewers. If you get a chance, what you could even do is send in your name to editors and let them know that you'd like to help review papers. A good way to learn how to write papers is to review papers and see how other people read. And the other thing is quite frankly, read the literature. You know, at your point in your careers, you should be reading quite a bit, and you will learn how papers are put together. It's just a lingo to a large extent, but it is an important lingo. And so with that, I wish you luck. I'll shut up, and I think we're going to have a few more people talk, and we're going to open it up for questions, right? Okay.
My name is Warren Dick, and I'm editor-in-chief of American Society of Agronomy. Excuse me. And I'm going to give you the top 10 list of problems I see consistently. I've been an editor or associate editor for 22 years. So I'm going to write these up. I'll send them to you if you want to distribute them or whatever. But top 10 doesn't mean that number 10 is the 10 most, down to number 1 is the most common. But these are 10 common, top 10 common issues that I see. Tables. should be neat, clean, and simple. I don't like to see tables that usually, sometimes it's unavoidable, but for the most part, if you see a table that spreads over a whole journal page, to me it says you've been lazy in analyzing the data and haven't pulled out the important stuff. So tables should be neat, clean, and simple, should be properly footnoted, and column labels should all be there. So when I look at the table, even if I don't read the rest of the paper, I know what you're trying to say just by looking at the table. Number two, figures, font size. With computers, you can make font size any size you want, but sometimes what happens, you take it out of, maybe out of a dissertation or thesis. Most people have copiers, so you can reduce it on your printer or on your computer. Reduce it down to the actual size they'll probably in a journal. And if the font size ends up being 3 point or 4 point on the labels, it's too small. I have pretty good eyes still, but you know, 3 and 4 point font is pretty hard to read. So don't be afraid to make your font size large on your figures. Number three, also with figures. Everybody likes to use color nowadays. But still, most of the time when a paper is downloaded from a computer or you photocopy, it's in what color? Black and white. So if you submit a journal article and you have closed circles black and closed circles dark blue, and somebody wants to print that out, are you going to be able to tell the difference between the two symbols?
No.
I try to tell my students, avoid color when you make a manuscript and use very contrasting type of symbolism in your graphs as you write those. Number four, significant figures. This has to do with how many numbers you put in a value. If you're measuring organic nitrogen, for example, you probably shouldn't say organic nitrogen in this soil was 0.246257. percent. You cannot be that precise, but I see that over and over and over again. Numbers way past what is really proper for a measurement. So significant figures, especially in tables, watch that. Number five, references style. It's not a reason to reject the paper, but when I see a manuscript that doesn't follow the style of the reference for the journal, immediately I think that author was probably a little bit lazy, because it's not hard to change the style to the manuscript you're submitting to. Number six, and this goes back to what Dr. Bullock said, have a focused introduction. It's very common the introduction is saying one thing about one topic and I get into the paper and it's a completely different topic. The introduction and the results and discussion should really be complementary, should agree with each other. Number seven, the results section. Okay, we're past the introduction, the results section. One of the things, again, is very common will be 6 or 7 pages of just a regurgitation of what's in the figures and the graphs. Figure two shows that this treatment was bigger than this treatment, and by, you know, and you'll go on for 6 and 7 pages, and it's very tedious to read, and when I get done with it, I said, well, really, what was important that I'm supposed to know about the data? So have a focused results section. Number eight, I'm following kind of now through, a well-thought-out discussion section. Where does your information fit with the existing literature and anything new? Again, Dr. Bullock had a good introduction to what I was going to say. What is new and how does your data really break new ground, and discuss what that all means. Number nine. I think I'm at number nine, right?
Yes.
Okay. The concluding sentence. Make it strong. One of the things I immediately ink out is a concluding a sentence like this, and it's so common. More studies are needed. When I read that sentence, immediately what it tells me, you didn't think your paper was any good. and hopefully somebody else can do better than you. Okay? So make a strong, what is it you found? Number 10, the abstract. It's the thing, and why I ended up here though, it's the thing most people will read. You probably will want to spend 2 or 3 times as much time writing your abstract as any other part of the paper. And I strongly, and there are good ways how to do that. Our journals help, you know, give you suggestions. But one thing I strongly like to encourage people to do is have some numerical data in your abstract. Don't make it all general. This treatment was bigger than this treatment, or it was better than this, and in a very generalized type of abstract. Try to say this treatment was 10 times better and this is why, or, you know, something specific, numerical, really helps in an abstract. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank all of the editors for taking the time to participate in this workshop today. I know I thought that was an excellent overview of the process and tips and different resources and locations where we can publish manuscripts, especially as early Krumberger members. So what I'd like to do now, we have about 30 minutes left, is just open it up for questions. And I would ask the editors to please come to the microphone and perhaps repeat the question.
That's hammered down, right? Can you pass it around?
Or? No, it's hammered down. Yeah, it's all taped up. So, any questions?
This is kind of a general question for any of the journals, but I don't know if this is handled differently for SSSA or ASA, but you know, sometimes you'll get conflicting reviewer comments. Somebody wants more of this, and the other reviewer wants less of that specific thing. How do you address those comments and resolve it?
That's not on me.
You have to go to the mic. So
all right. Well, I don't have to. But
yeah, that's not only common. It's almost always the way it is. All right. What the way the structures will happen is that there will be one person. They may be called an associate editor or some sort. They'll have some flavor. Technical editor or something, who will actually be the person who synthesizes the different opinions. Okay, it is completely, if you have two reviewers who tell you to do completely different things, and that can happen. One can say, this is horrible, it needs to go out, and the next one says, you should have little schools named after you because you put this in. If the technical editor or associate editor is not helping you at that point, it's fine to ask them. You know, that extreme is rare. The more important part is that when a comment is raised, that you respond to each and every comment made. Many times, in fact, I would say almost always, your response will be longer than your paper was originally. You should write the page that occurred. For example, if they write on they have little jots on the paper, say on page 3, line 12. The reviewer wrote this, and then you lay it out, and then you respond. You say either I agree or I disagree. If I agree, you tell them where they can find the change to reflect that in the new manuscript. If you disagree, you say why, and you back yourself up with references. And so you could have two reviewers that completely disagree, but you may agree with one of them and disagree with the other one. The point is be so clear that when the person who is now going back and looking at those reviews and looking at your responses, they don't have to try and figure out what you've said. But yeah, don't be surprised that if people, because the reviewers don't see the other reviews, right? They have no idea what somebody else said. And so they may say something different. And certainly it's not the case where every reviewer is right. You know, they're wrong as well, so.
I think the main point of what Don was trying to say is you don't have to make every change every reviewer suggests, but when you don't make a change, you have to explain why, and he was saying such as with a reference.
Oh, absolutely. You do not have to make every change. But always be polite.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and that's not always the case for everyone.
Any additional questions?
Excuse me. Sometimes when we submit a paper to a journal and we get the comments from the editor or chief editor that this paper deals only with the local problem. So, what is your answer?
The question was, is sometimes they send a paper in and the comment comes back and says that this is only a local problem, and so therefore it's not acceptable. Yeah, we do see that sometimes. For example, there will be people who will send in papers that, in fact, are important in the sense that they might be very good pieces for extension. You know, you're going to look at the effect of nitrogen on four cultivars of something in a developing country. That may be very good information for the people who are within that inference space, but it's not going to be published on an international scale. Yeah, you do have to have a paper that a contribution that is wider than some local area for it to be acceptable. Does that kind of explain? Yeah, I mean, again, now, you know, if that comes back, you can come back in a polite way and say, but it is important because while I'm working in this one area, my point is much more broad than that. And I'm talking about some sort of, you know, whatever, eco-physiological impact or something like that. Be creative. But that's part of, in the very, very early on, why did you do the work? Right? If you did the work because my farmers don't know how to put this pesticide on these three specific cultivars, that's not an international paper. That's kind of the difference. And so you, very, very early on, you want to make sure why this paper should be published in an international journal.
Sometimes we receive comments that the English is not good and it should be checked by the from the English-speaking person. So we don't have English-speaking persons here. So the agronomy journal, there should be some English people here, so they will improve our
grammar. I agreed with you until that last part. No, it's not. No, we don't have the resources to that level of editing. What we will do, and if I send you the letter, what was in that letter was directions to professional editors that will do it, and they're very reasonably priced. There are people who will edit a journal, as long as it's readable to begin with, and as long as you give them a couple of weeks to do it, for like $100 US.
$100, if you multiply by 90, it is big money for us.
I'm talking about one paper at a time. Yeah. No, we don't have the resources. We do not have the resources to be your English editor.
This is my suggestion for these.
Good suggestion, but we're looking for the second suggestion. No, we don't have the resources to do that. I absolutely sympathize with you. I have written scientific publications in other languages too, and in languages that you are not fluent, it is very difficult. I'm extremely sympathetic towards you, but we simply don't have the resources to do that. And quite frankly, the people. There are other people who can do it much faster and probably better than we can. We can get it to the point where we can judge it scientifically, but as far as really rapid reading, rapid writing, I think you want somebody who does a lot of that. Yeah, I know that's not the answer you looked for, but we do not have the resources to do that for you.
Can you please explain how much how they take a long time from right from submission to till print? Why they take a long time?
The question was, why do we take a long time from submission to print? Well, I can tell you it's getting faster. We've had now the print part. I can go from submission to first decision, and in agronomy journal, submission to first decision is under 20 days. So you have that. We have, and our average from first submission to final decision, the average right now is right at 50. Actually, the median, which is a better central tendency number, is less than that. But so on average, it's right at 50 days. And you know whether it was accepted or not. And a large part of that is getting the revisions back after the first letter. Now, once that's done, yeah, there is some time, Raymond, getting it actually published.
I want to add that in most cases, for most of our journals, these trying to get that time turned around to the authors, sometimes there's an occasional where one paper for some reason gets hung up. And as you as an author, if you're not getting anything back, it's your responsibility to contact the editor of the journal and find out what happened. Because occasionally something, some little snag in the system happens, and usually one of the editors or technical editors or associate editors catches it, but occasionally something just doesn't get caught. And as an author, if you're not hearing back in a reasonable time, it is your responsibility to contact the author and find out what's happened. I know my own personal experience, our society journals have a much better turnaround than when I send it to some other journal.
I've had papers go through Agronomy Journal from submission to final decision under 2 weeks. If it's written well, you know, put yourself in the shoes of editors or associate editors. If they get a paper, it's hard to read, the English is poor, the titles are rough. You've got other things. You can't read it quickly. You're going to set it aside and say, well, you know, my deadline's not here yet. I'll do that right before the deadline. If the paper is easy to read, if it's succinct, if it's well written, they may knock that out as soon as it comes in. And so part of the delay is due to the authors not presenting papers that are easy to review quickly. But the long and short of it is, you will know within a couple months in our journals. There are other journals where they're a year, some of them. But no, not with ours.
I was talking from this point of view because in our country, I am from Pakistan.
Uh-huh.
So in our country, most of them universities have the requirements that you should have at least one international journal's paper for your completing graduation. I mean a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
So can you provide any proof for that we can
that you published it?
Yes.
Yeah, we call the journal. We give you page numbers, yeah. Maybe I don't understand your question. Proof that you published in our journal?
Yes. It's either your manuscript has been accepted.
Yeah.
And you have either...
Well, the time frame from being accepted to actually being published is at the most 60 days. And it would be a weird situation where it's that long. It's usually much faster than that. Yeah, in fact, a lot of committees, what they're going to now is people are actually inserting the journal papers as the chapters. They generally have an extended literature review and then maybe a discussion at the end, but the papers themselves in the middle. Which is, I personally like to see a thesis that way. Yes.
I'm a graduate student and I'm kind of new to this process, and I always get a little stuck when trying to figure out what reviewers to suggest. Mm-hmm. And I have questions like, should these be people I've never met? Does it look good for me to suggest people that are really hot shots in the field? And how closely related should their research be to my own?
That's a good question.
The question was about how do you pick reviewers to suggest. I know for myself, when I write a paper, I always send it to a couple reviewers even before I send it to the journal, because they may catch some little thing that I didn't make clear. So I do not suggest those reviewers. I may even tell them I've already gotten an internal review by these people, so they don't go back to them for another review. What I do is I look through my paper. I look through papers that I've cited, and to see if maybe some of those people would be good reviewers. I may even do little searches of other papers. I mean, reprints that I have of similar topics. But I always make sure I come up with some names, like I said, that are different than the ones who've already read it. And, you know, I may suggest someone I know pretty well that's not reviewed it yet, but I'll also try to find some people that maybe I've met, but I don't really know, you know, that closely. But they're working in, you know, close enough related field that they can handle the journal, the paper.
But I personally think that absolutely that the reviewers should be experts in that area. You know, you may know them, that's fine, but they need to be experts in that area because for several reasons. One, they know the content well enough to actually help the paper. And that's what it's all about. You want the paper to be read by other people and cited by other people, and so they can make the paper better. Secondly, if they're in that area, they're much more likely to agree to review the paper. And that's difficult to find good, competent people to review the paper. I mean, you can get what I always call a drive-by shooting, which is when somebody who doesn't know anything about your paper is a reviewer and reviews it and just tears you all up because they don't understand the topic. So by all means, whoever you recommend should have, you know, expertise in that area.
I'm going to make one last comment on here because this is something that kind of would bug me often when this people would suggest reviewers. You go back and a paper is 5 years old and you get the name and the email address of that person. It's a good idea to check to see if that person is still at that institution because then I'll use that email and it'll bounce back. And I say, why didn't that guy tell me in the first place that, you know, this email is no longer in service? So it's a good idea to check once you've chosen your potential reviewers. Just do a search on Google and see where they are. If that, you know, you might still miss it once in a while, but you're going to catch a lot more that way.
Any other additional questions from anyone?
I guess.
So I just wonder, like, how to make a really strong conclusion. What is the critical thinking in your process in making a strong conclusion?
JQ, and I think some other journals are going through this, they require the authors to write a summary in 5 to 7 sentences. Many times when we write proposals, sometimes we have to, you know, do the same sort of thing. Capture the essence of a whole proposal, which might be quite complex, in the same 3, 4, 5 sentences. What you need to do to write a strong conclusion, think about the key words, the key findings, and then start playing around with the sentence structure around those things. And try to make it a declarative statement, you know, a very strong this, instead of saying, we think this is important, but we found that. And then make a very simple, strong declarative statement. And you should be able to do that in 3 to 5 sentences maximum. The take-home message. If you were going to, I tell my students this a lot of times, if you were going to tell your mother what this paper was all about, how would you tell her in 3 to 5 sentences? That's what I would suggest.
I mean, every paper has an implied hypothesis that are stated. So, for example, I read a really good one the other day. These folks were interested in whether or not some of these genetically modified plants had different residue breakdown rates once they were out in the field. And so they, early on, they stated that as a hypothesis. Literally, this is our hypothesis, and this is how we're going to test it. And at the very end, they said, based upon this work, we reject our null hypothesis, and we conclude that, in fact, the rates are different. I thought it was perfect. It was very succinct and to the point, and that's what the reader went away with. And so, again, it's the idea. State the problem, then here's the work we did to test the problem, here's our conclusions based on the problem. This is not literature. It's only literature in the sense that words follow words. You know, a scientific paper is much more like directions on how to put together a toy box or something. You know, very, very succinct. Any word that you can take out of a sentence and it doesn't change the meaning of the sentence, take out the word. And you'll have much more success.
This is maybe immaterial, but I'm going to say this also. Whenever I work with my students, I'm sure all these would say the same thing. The first time I go through the exercise of writing a paper with my student, they're always surprised because I'm on the fourth draft. They thought they were done on the second draft. I'm on the fourth, and I say, you know, I think we maybe can get this done in about 3 or 4 more drafts. And they're really surprised that I take so much care. But I had a professor when I was going through graduate school, he made the statement, it stuck with me. He says, every word on the paper is a drop of my blood. And that stuck with me. You really have to be careful.
Sir?
It was just a small comment in regards to making sure emails are correct of reviewers. I was recently looking up one citation, trying to contact that author. Googled all over, couldn't find it. I guess his original paper was written when he was a graduate student. Does the society have, can you search the members' lists in any way?
Mm-hmm. If you're a member.
And if you're a member, and if they are a member, it would, should be updated.
But you can, I mean, guys, this is a lot easier than it used to be, trust me.
Yeah, well, I bet.
Yeah. Doing it 25 years ago was tough.
What would you say the most common?
I was just going to add to that. As early career members, many of you are in the process of moving from one location to the other. Please keep your information up to date.
In general, listening to the several editors, what would you say are the most common causes of rejection? And how do you arrive at rejecting or accepting a paper in brief?
Could you repeat the question, please?
Sure.
You repeat.
So I think in short, the question was, what are the most common fatal flaws in a manuscript that cause it to be rejected? And I think Don actually covered these very, very good. I think one of the things which can come into play is if it's very poorly written. And that often is a language thing, but not always. Sometimes there's just very poor organization and you just don't get your point across. And this gets back to Warren's comment about how you need to really sweat over getting that paper together. I think another common flaw, and again this was mentioned by Don, is the analysis of the data. Interpretation, people can always argue one way or the other, but if you did the wrong analysis, whether that's a chemical or physical or biological analysis or it's a statistical analysis, you know, if it's wrong, it's wrong. If it's right, it's right. There's usually not as much wiggle room there in those sorts of things. The other one is whether the science moves the field forward to some degree. It doesn't have to win the Nobel Prize, but does it actually contribute meaningfully to the literature and to the wider literature? It's not just, well, one more crop I tested or one more fertilizer that I happen to test. So I guess those are the ones that come to my mind.
Well, you can come up here while I'm talking. I'll give you another example. Just happened to me recently as a reviewer. The same set of authors had published like four or five papers exactly the same. The only thing they had changed was the chemical compound they were studying. And I had seen two of them before, and when the third one came across, I didn't even read it. I just turned it right back and said, there's no need for another paper like this. They should have all lumped them together in the first place. So, you know, this least publishable unit, sometimes as young career scientists, you want to get kind of plump up your resume a little bit, but maybe in the long run, that's not a good idea.
This is just another topic that Don Bullock mentioned about your thesis or your dissertation. You tend to make the paper too long, and it can happen even when you get into research. I remember when I was an associate editor, there was an author that I think the paper had something like 20 graphs. And what that was that 20 different samples of the same thing. They're looking at the different trends in the different graphs. Don't do that. You may have that. You don't need to put every data point without some sort of summary, whether it's statistical summary or whether you find some way to look at those curves and some number that describes them. You list the means in the table. You need to find a way that you don't stick every individual sample in your paper without some sort of summarization or analysis. And that's another fatal flaw that it comes around.
I'll make a distinction between what I would call a fatal flaw in rejection and a mistake in a rejection. And the reason I'm saying that is there are some papers that I will release that later I think will get accepted. But what I don't want to do is bring a paper that's in really bad shape and then send it back to you and say in revision. Because while not going into revision is not a guarantee for publication, it's an agreement that we're going to try and work with you. And so there are many papers that, again, let me state again, that for one reason or another, often English, wordiness, whatever, that we will release that will later come back to us. There are, however, some papers that simply have errors that cannot be fixed. Lack of replication is one. very common. You know, a lack of environmental replication for some problems is a problem. Those would be the biggie. The second biggie we've talked about is the lack of contribution. And I would plug in the idea that it's too regional to be a lack of contribution. So if you have a paper that simply doesn't make a contribution, and we had one last week with the same authors who had written this paper, and their exact conclusion was the same on the second paper, and somebody in the area caught it. They said, this is a great paper, well written, it's interesting, it's identical to the last one. Okay, boy, are they mad. By the way, you never, when you go into editorial work, you do not make any friends, you make lots and lots of enemies. And they get mad at you. But there was no contribution. You know, their conclusion was 50% of the nitrogen from chicken manure is available the next year. Okay. I learned that in 1972. I can show you the textbook. I've still got it in my library. You know, there's some things we know. And so you need to push it forward a little bit harder than that.
Actually, I don't know already about that, your journal in particular, but are you like more in favor of kind of long articles or short ones? Especially when we do like our PhDs, you know, we write a dissertation and we try to make the paper as a summary of it, you know, so we cut from it. But should we cut to 20 or like to 10 or to 5 pages? Or?
Well, I can tell you, we charge you more for long papers.
I always feel that the length of the paper depends to a large degree on the work, but the trend for many years, at least in the Soils Journal, is for papers on average to get longer and longer and longer. And I date myself, but back when you actually had to have someone type your paper up as opposed to word processing it, I think you valued words more than you do today. And so I think generally shorter is better. I think that an introduction, if you're thinking of double space pages, if it runs much more than 4, which is about 1 page in a journal, you're getting too long on your introduction, and that might even be a little bit too long. So some papers merit more length because they're involved, they're complicated, there's a lot of the design that has to be explained, whatever it is. But I would say, generally speaking, shorter is going to be better in almost every case.
Shorter is also harder. To paraphrase some famous author, I can't remember the name is, but he's writing this, he says, first of all, let me apologize for the length of this letter, but I don't have time to write a short one. You know, and that's really true. It is hard, particularly when they're your words, to write short. And so that's where your co-authors come into play. You write, they cut. You know, but yeah, any, and I said it before, any time you can take a word out of a sentence and it's the same meaning, take the word out. Any time you can take a sentence out of a paragraph and it's the main paragraph, then take it out. Any time you take a whole page out and it doesn't change the story, take the page out. Yeah.
I'm new to this process also, and I think this is probably journal specific, but how many reviewers does a paper typically get sent to on the first time around? And before a decision is made, how many responses from those reviewers need to be back in before the decision out there?
Yeah, I'm sure we're all about the same.
So every paper is reviewed by receives at least 2 reviews. We try to get 3 reviews. And again, I think as was mentioned a little bit earlier, if it's a subject area that's a little bit different or maybe crosses disciplines to some degree, you might even go for more, say for 4 reviews. But every paper gets 2, and we certainly encourage the people in our system that make the decision, the associate editors, that if they have 2 reviews which they're confident in and there's 1 review that's outstanding, to go ahead and make the decision. It's unlikely that third review is going to tip the balance the other way.
Yeah, particularly if they're strong rejects. If you have 2 reviews back from people that are just strong, if this paper is not worth publishing, then you don't want to take up the time of the third review. No, but we have anywhere from 2 to 4.
We have time for maybe 1 more question, if there's anything else.
Again, new to this process myself. I think one of you had a slideshow showing the process by which we started with the editor and moved on through. the editor himself or herself might make that initial decision to release the paper right away. If it goes beyond that, does that automatically mean, okay, there's hope, or could the release come automatically from the next step down the line? I thought you may have just hinted at that in your last answer. Okay.
Yeah, for us,
we'll find this out as we go through it. So.
Different journals are slightly different. I think probably Agronomy Journal and Soils are the two extremes on the Society Journal in terms of how they're processed. As an editor, I will sometimes reject a manuscript which is just so clearly not going to make it. But normally, it goes through to our associate editor, and it may or may not go out to external reviewers at that point, if they decide that it doesn't look like it's going to make it. So, although it's great that Don sometimes gets papers back to people accepted within 2 weeks, I'd say more typically, if you hear back from a journal within 1 or 2 weeks, it's probably going to be a release and not an acceptance.
Well, just in the interest of time, I wanted to thank everybody for attending today, and as well, I'd like to thank the editors again for their time and their excellent information that they passed along. Just a reminder, please hand in your surveys. And just one thing to make you aware about, there's one more workshop in this series tomorrow, How to Become an Entrepreneur in Agronomy, Crops, and Soils. It's in this room at 1:25 p.m. So thank you.